President Iduci.
Here. Financial, please stand.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, Republic for which it stands, a nation, God, indivisible.
Okay, okay, we have one citizen's comment. James? If you can just come to the podium, just state your name, and it's regarding cul-de-sacs, which is not on our agenda, so. Yep.
Hi.
Yep.
James R. Godlewski, 1531 William Condominiums. Just as you know, I think you probably already down our street now. Traffic is just flying off of north, headed east. They're also flying down the alley. My wife has seen it the last couple of weeks, especially. So just one.
Yeah.
Our safety concerns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's
so,
all.
No, James, thank you very much for coming. And, you know, we are taking feedback. Jeff Loster, our public works director, is, you know, taking feedback. So we really appreciate you coming out, giving us that feedback. Yeah. Okay, we'll go ahead and move on to elected official comments and announcements. So we'll start with Trustee O'Connell.
Thank you. Happy New Year to all. Couple of things. I just was in reading and some posts and things like that. Just a reminder to residents, the requirement for the 10-year sealed smoke detectors began January 1st. And I asked Chief this evening. And we have receptacles for the old ones to be recycled in the firehouse and upstairs, correct? Secondly, I want to congratulate the Kiwanis for their Christmas lights. According to a good source, they sold 700 units, and the club netted about $5,000. It was really pretty. As if you drove around the community, I guess it was on December 17th. So congratulations to them. And then just something I heard on the news tonight before I came over. January is a National Blood Donation Month, and apparently there is a shortage after the holidays, plus with people with colds and flus and everything. And so if you get a chance and you can spare the time, donate some blood. So go ahead.
I have no comments other than say Happy New Year to everyone, and just thinking ahead with regard to lights and recycling. I was hoping maybe Trustee Gillis, I know you said something last year, but when it is about as far as recycling lights?
The lights recycling receptacle is out now on Central Avenue, and it will be there until mid-January, January 15th.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I have nothing to add.
I have nothing to add. Thank you.
Just want to wish everyone a happy new year. And the only thing I'll add is the evergreens. The village is collecting them on, I think, on Tuesdays, correct? So if you have evergreens, wreaths, et cetera, you could remember to do that. And they're collecting them every Tuesday of the month.
And I have nothing to add other than to make sure you take off all your ornaments and metal from those greens.
Right. Thank you very much. I do not have much to add as well, but other than to say Happy New Year. And on a probably somber note, I am going to announce that our administrator, Brian Murphy, for personal reasons, will be resigning from his post as village administrator effective January 27th. And as a team, we're going to talk about, you know, our personnel steps for us going forward in executive session, and we'll I guess announce that once we come out of executive session. So that's all I have. So we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. So if I can get a motion, move consent agenda item A through D.
A through D.
Any comments or questions regarding these items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to please read the items and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes December 12, 2022. B, accounts payable December 2022, $2,013,541.28. C, department reports. E, village administrator's report. Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Our next item is on new business, and it's relating to the Safety Act that was passed and discussed at the General Assembly at the end of the year. So I'd ask our chief to podium and give us a presentation on the nuances of the act. I know there's still a few things still up in the air on the act. And
according to Administrator Murphy, I have to be done by 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Now, it's almost 900 pages, but I will try to get done.
Well, put it this way, there won't be anybody around this table. So.
I love the honesty this board operates under. Yes. Good evening. The 2021 Illinois Safety Accountability Fairness and Equity Today, commonly known as Safety Act, enacts extensive reform impacting many areas of criminal justice system, including pre-arrest diversion, policing, pretrial sentencing, and corrections. The omnibus bill made sweeping changes of how the criminal justice system operates in Illinois. Even aside from it primarily eliminating cash bail, the law revises police use of force standards and procedures, reforms complaints and misconduct proceedings for police officers, amends police officer certification and decertification processes, and amends both pretrial and the correctional proceedings. The Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority has been tasked with implementing several of the Act's provisions. These areas of the Act include policing, pretrial, deaths in custody, as well as leading and serving on task forces. Tonight, you'll hear from our subject matter experts, Commander James Greenwood, who will provide background on the bill, the mandates, training, and officer misconduct sections. Detective Sergeant Labriola will speak on the pretrial fairness sections of the bill. Also, we are honored to have Deputy Supervisor of the 4th District, Cook County State's Attorney's Office, Gene Wood, to make a couple comments and offer any clarity that he can at this time on the changes that will be occurring to the entire Illinois criminal justice system. First, I'd like to call up Commander James Green.
Good evening, Board. Thank you for having us this evening. And good evening, everybody in the audience and out there on Zoom. As Chief O'Shea stated, we're going to cover the Safety Act and what it is. It's, as the Chief already covered in his brief remarks, the 2021 Illinois Safety Act enacted extensive reforms impacting many areas of the criminal justice system, including pre-arrest diversion, policing, pretrial sentencing, and corrections. Some of the earlier things that occurred with the bill, this is something that's been rolled out, I'm sorry, the law, it's been rolled out over a period of 2 years. It's not something that just popped up. It received a lot of media attention lately, but this is something that we've been working on for the past couple of years with the since July 1st of 2021. The Safety Act expands officer training on various topics, but especially crisis intervention, de-escalation, use of force, high-risk traffic stops, implicit bias, racial and ethnic sensitivity training, and emergency response. Good news to report to the board and to the folks here is we were already working on many of these things and already doing these. It just enhances or enforces it statewide. Also, the Safety Act expanded use of and changes guidelines and requirements for body-worn cameras and who may access, review, or delete the footage. There are different timelines for different sized departments on when body cameras had to be implemented by depending on size of the department, and for our department our guideline is 2025, but we're already in the works of getting that software and hardware on board here at the police department ahead of time. The Safety Act also offered new standards for when police use force. The Safety Act expanded officer training. Oh, wait, I just almost read the same slide over again. Yeah. We're ready for the next one.
Yeah.
Thank you. It requires officers to intervene if other officers use unauthorized or excessive force. This is something that we had already worked on with the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police to make sure our policy and procedures were up to date. And in furtherance of that, something that the board's aware of is the act of bystandership for law enforcement. We began that training in December of this 2022 after a couple months of rolling it out. And now as of the beginning of February, we'll have the whole department trained in this area, which one of the things is being able to not only recognize when something's out of line by one officer, but also for officers to intervene with that behavior, but with that officer. Great training. I went through it myself, and I know everybody that went through it so far has been really receptive of it. Some of the other components: expands crime statistics reporting monthly to the FBI and the state police, allows for medical treatment for police in custody without unreasonable delay, something we'd already been doing since forever, as long as I can say. For 26 years we've been doing that. And also mandates use of force reporting the FBI National Use of Force Database. Safety Act policing, just in tow with the rest of the items I've covered, allows the Attorney General to investigate, initiate civil lawsuits, or settlements against police agencies that have a pattern of depriving individuals of their rights. So it gave the Attorney General the ability to do some things that they could be involved in, but gives them a little bit more strength and power in their response to any issues that arise. Also established monthly reporting of officers responding to mental health crises to the Illinois State Police. One of the bigger components of the Act too was it created a statewide decertification process for officers, whereas going through the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standards Board, certain instances are reported to them. They're thereby able to take a certification and decertify it or put it under review during an investigation. Allows for an investigation of anonymous complaints against officers, and also allows complaint filings against police officers without sworn affidavits or other legal documentation, at least for the initial reporting. Safety Act also expanded notification of police misconduct to the Illinois Training Board, which I already discussed, that's the mechanism and how the decertification process would begin. Requires a publicly available database for any police misconduct that results in decertification, and also changed the Illinois State Police Merit Board composition and reporting to the board. Safety Act also created an Illinois Law Enforcement Certification Review Panel. So that's, again, just as part of that certification, decertification process, these are all things that needed to be implemented as well. And also enhanced automatic and discretionary termination of officers, depending upon the allegation and the violation. The Safety Act also changed procedures for automatic and discretionary decertification of officers, similar to the automatic termination or dismissal of an officer, also the automatic and discretionary decertification of officers. Also includes provisions for immediate suspensions and training and employment information that can be verified for the Training Standards Board and during the certification decertification process. Safety Act also provides people in custody. These are things that rolled out now as we go along through the enactment of the law. Up to 3 phone calls within 3 hours, and that went into effect January 1st of last year. Also provides for confidential mental health screening and counseling for officers. That's state mandated, and the Illinois Law Enforcement Training Standards Board is going to be rolling that out as we go forward. Some other new requirements for probationary officers, which were things that, again, were already covered in academy, police academy, and then on our in-service training, onboarding training, and then going forward, crisis intervention team, scenario-based training, use of force, high-risk traffic stops, among others. Some of the other officer training components, minimum of 30 hours of in-service training every 3 years for all officers in these categories, including constitutional and proper use of law enforcement authority, procedural justice, civil rights, human rights, reporting child abuse and neglect, and cultural competency, including implicit bias awareness and cultural sensitivity. Again, these are trainings that we've been doing for years and years. It's just enforcing it statewide to make sure that all agencies are doing the same type of training statewide. Some of the other training aspects, scenario-based role-playing, at least 12 hours of hands-on scenario-based role-playing is mandated, at least 6 hours on use of force and de-escalation techniques, and also specific training on law concerning stops, searches, and the use of force, the Fourth Amendment, specific training on officer safety techniques, including cover, concealment, and time, and at least 6 hours on high-risk traffic stops. Again, training we've been doing for years, but just enhancing and enforcing and making sure that all departments are doing the same things. And at this point, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Detective Sergeant Labriola. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. So at this part of the presentation, I'm going to go over the Pre-Trial Fairness Act. I'm going to discuss some of the topics that I think have been controversial or at least discussed within the media among conversations amongst ourselves. I know I've gotten a lot of questions both personally and professionally about this. So right now we all know that pending the Illinois Supreme Court appeal, right now there is nothing in place that is going to abolish the cash bail. That being said, this presents the results of a risk assessment from being the sole basis of a detention decision. Had notifications to both victims as well as the alleged offender. These changes that are going to be in place, they're having to do with the pretrial release procedures, including the release on their own recognizance, or what we will call an I-bond, so basically a signature bond saying that you would, in fact, obey by the directives of your release and up to court. Some of these are going to include electronic monitoring, home confinement, revocation, modification, and sanctions. So any Class C and any Class B misdemeanors, they're going to be given a citation, a notice, or sometimes it's called a cite and release. Basically what that is that if somebody were to allegedly commit one of these offenses, that person, he or she, would be given a citation out on the street. There are conditions of the release, and then they're asked to come to court at that point in time. So what are your Class A and Class B misdemeanors in a moment? But it can range anything from simple assault or simple battery to a retail theft to theft under $500. So these are going to be our non-violent offenses, our most basic offenses that are out on the street, okay? And those are the B's and C's. I said battery. I misspoke on that. That's a Class A. Anybody who does commit a Class A misdemeanor or a felony under certain guidelines here, those folks would be brought to the police department, they would be fingerprinted, and then from there they would be given their notice to appear at that point in time. Their site, and then they would be released from custody. So this is the denial of the pretrial release. Again, like I discussed earlier, I think that there was not only a misconception, but I think, you know, parties in Springfield were probably pointing the finger at one or another exactly what some of these statutes were, and, you know, you heard people urge to, I don't know what, but so we do have non-probational felonies based on the charge or the defendant's criminal history. That is a reason that you go ahead and detain somebody and send them over to bond hearing, keep them in custody for the evening, for the day, and have them appear before a judge. Also in that statute, they're forcible felonies, stalking, aggravated stalking, any violations of an order of protection, domestic battery, aggravated domestic battery, certain sex offenses. Obviously, you could see the exclusionary rule or the exclusionary offenses that are included within that. Most firearm offenses, those are going to be, in a sense, when we get into abduction, hate crimes, threatening a public official, aggravated battery with a weapon, et cetera. Again, most of the times either a firearm or a weapon. We have felony violations of the Humane Care Act, Animals Act, and aggravated DUI offenses, and any person that we feel is a high likelihood that they're going to flee or they won't attend court or any other class 4 felony for that. There is a large list of actual sustainable felonies. Here is just a list of all of your forcible felonies. Starts anywhere from treason, which not too often, but we get into aggravated battery, great bodily harm, kidnapping, and then we also get into the second-degree murder, criminal sexual assault, robberies, residential burglaries, things of those nature, which are classified as forcible. Any offense under these categories, those folks would be detained, okay? They would be here for the evening and then would appear before a judge the following day or until the investigation is over. So a judge at that point would. And if there are any questions, comments, or concerns, again, like the chief said, Gene Wood from the 4th District is here. He can answer whatever it is that he possibly can answer. I know he's very limited considering that there hasn't been a decision made, or at least we're in the appeal process before it goes to the court. But myself, Commander Greenwood, and Chief O'Shea can take any questions now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Well, we do have Class A, Class B, and Class C. So Class A would be anything from a simple battery. Mm-hmm. It could be driving on a suspended license. Let's say retail theft, if it's a certain amount. At that point in time, the person could come to the station, they'll be fingerprinted, and then we'll give them the notice to appear. So your Class B and Class Cs, there are very few of them, I think, for the most part, that we would actually even charge anybody with. But a good example would be criminal trespass, you know. Shopping center over at Harlem, and the business wants that person banned. We would fall under one of those where we cite that person, give them the conditions that are listed on the citation, and then they would be free to leave from there. That would be considered your forcible felony at that point in time. Yes. Burglary, so let me just clarify that. So burglary to, let's say, a vehicle or a detached garage, that is not necessarily considered a forcible. Residential burglary into your residence, or if you have an attached garage, which would still be part of the residence, would be considered a forcible felony. That would fall under the list of detainable. If somebody you wake up in the middle of the night, you say somebody has just been in the car, we arrest that person, it does not fall under the forcible felony. However, with some of those other conditions, it could be detainable based on, you know, prior knowledge, maybe the fact of if they are a threat or a further threat to the community or yourself or anybody else. There's the possibility. That's the kind of gray area, you know, where you get into, and that's going to be discretionary at that point in time, in addition to, I should say, probably more of that person's background and the specific.
It was shoplifting.
Shoplifting would fall under the Class A misdemeanor. That would be the typical. You would bring that individual into the police station. You would fingerprint him or her, and then you would release them with the notice to appear at that point in time. Question. I know Commander Greenwood, I know he went to the ABLE training. He's better versed at that, so I'll just move to the side here for a second.
It's made to clarify, has been mentioned a little bit, to not be a gray area, okay, where there are repercussions for any officer, for any police department employee. It chose not to, and it's been identified. It becomes part of the internal investigation, and if it's egregious enough, it would probably be something handled by either Integrity Unit or another unit at the Illinois State Police or even the Illinois Law Enforcement and Training and Standards Board that also had the power to do those investigations also. So it's actually taken the gray area out of it, if that helps. And just so while we have him here, Gene, are you able to step up, make a couple comments on what you've heard tonight? I know there's some things you can't talk about,
sure,
but
sure.
You have a very friendly audience here.
Yeah, I'm kind of limited in what I can say by my office right now, but all I do want to say is it's under constitutional review by the Illinois Supreme Court. This is the first in the nation, they're abolishing bail. So this is like a sea change to us and to the police. I've been doing this for 26 years. So we'll just have to wait and see. They set oral arguments for mid-March. So I could see a ruling taking months down the line. We were working feverishly, as was Justin, was calling me every other day about this. Get ready for January 1st. December 28th, a Kankakee court trial judge rules it unconstitutional. pulled the rug out from everybody. So now we're back to square one, and things are just going on just like they are. What Justin was talking about with the Class B and Cs, you know, they just cite and release, but they can also, if the person who they've detained or stopped is posing a real and present threat to anyone or to himself, they can bring him to the courthouse. They have that authority to do that. And once they do that, then we can put it before the judge. It's all going to be in the judge, but if this thing goes forward, there'll be no more cash bail. You either just detain a guy or you release him with conditions, with an ankle bracelet or whatever.
I ask just to clarify, it's the entire Safety Act that's being held up by this case, the appeal. It's not just the cash bail element to it?
I think it's the cash bail element that's being
that's
it's the cash
that's
bail.
The rest of it's going
right.
Forward.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
And the case originally only involved like the 16 counties, but then the Supreme Court put a hold on all of it.
Yeah.
So there's no inconsistency.
Right.
But all just for the cash bail element.
Right.
Right. Just for the
cash bail. And like I say, it's Illinois is the first in the nation, but it's coming in other states. Mm-hmm. So I can see even the United States Supreme Court ruling.
Should I ask her? I mean, do you mind if you can state your name?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Use the microphone because it's getting recorded.
Sorry.
Yep. No worries.
Earlier, you were and bringing them in for. They're not detained, assaulted, or. Or any is not detained.
Sexual assault is detained.
Domestic
violence is detained. We get a hearing. Okay. It doesn't mean they're going to be detained. That's going to be up to the judge. I'll bring them in.
Okay. That's what I just wanted to.
Class B or C, they bring up. No, they cite them and release on the scene. Class A and certain Class 4 felonies, not detainable, like being and eluding. Bring them to the station. Cite and release. Give them like a week court date to show up.
As Gene said, I've been doing this for 26 years as well, so I think the biggest challenge is just getting used to the procedures relative to the Safety Act, the Pretrial Fairness Act, which is a very small part of the whole Safety Act. On the rest of the Safety Act, everything in there we've already been doing, or it's just enhanced what we're doing or given us more guidelines, but it's all training and all positive change. In this, with the Pretrial Fairness Act, with it still being open and pending, I think it's just as Gene said, a sea change in how we're so used to bad guy, bring him in. Either it was somebody that went to court or didn't. There were already provisions in the law for all of these things. They're just being really called something different. A lot of times people would come in for a misdemeanor battery or misdemeanor case, which might be a Class A misdemeanor, but they were given an I-bond, which is a signature bond. Now, instead of it being called a signature bond, it's going to be called a notice to appear and a citation, which they still get the same paperwork on. Well, similar paperwork on. It's just a little different. So it's really just the procedural change in a lot of this. So and just to help you clarify, one of the questions you had when Gene was still up here, the CSA and the predatory CSA, those are the sexual assaults. There's too long to fit on a little square up there. So those are, that would have probably answered the question if they were spelled out. So those are the, anything that's, you can think of egregious and very serious, that person, or if we think the person, as Gene said, is going to be a threat to the public or himself or the victim, that's somebody we can still bring in. We can still, you know, follow procedures based on that. Yeah, with sexual assaults and in cases of that serious nature, those folks are still going to go over and see a judge, and the judge will make that determination. You're welcome.
Any further questions for Beth and our guest? Yeah, sure, Ken.
I just want to know. But still waiting.
I think the best answer I have for that is discussions like this, where the elected folks understand what's going on, the people that attend the meetings understand the changes, and then people getting that message rather than something that's one way or the other, you know, having a different tilt on it, agree with it or disagree with it, you know. This really spells it out. It's not as, when we first heard about it, we were, oh my goodness, what's going on? It's such a big change. And then when you really sat down and looked at the changes, a lot of it, like I said, is procedural change in what we're calling it versus what it already was, you know. So I think the more people talk about it and get educated about what the Act actually says and what it means to do, it'll go with time, hopefully, and with more discussion.
I just wanted to add, at our community safety meetings, our probably the next two that come up will be covering what is known at the time. Of course, there won't be any decisions during our first one here in January that comes up. But hopefully by the next one, we'll be able to do some overview of what we know. And really every agency in the state of Illinois is going to be rolling out different media messaging on it. If you can imagine, there, as far as administrative and procedural part, that wasn't written into the bill. So now you have every county trying to figure out how it fits their governance across the state of Illinois. And there's the largest number of law enforcement agencies, as you know, is in Cook County in the state of Illinois. So Trustee Vasquez knows that we're on some working groups, and whether it's Chicago, the state police, the Sheriff's Department, or some of the other larger Cook County agencies, a lot of them have, we've worked very hard to get some of the procedures down. Cook County does have that consulting group, Gene, that's working on it also. So there's a lot of opinions right now, a lot of individual, maybe attorneys' views on things. There's also a chief judge or who's the judge that sits on that committee, from 26? Judge Navarro, who some of you may be familiar with, he's trying to help facilitate this also, and also look at it from the judge's point of view, and of course, Chief Judge Evans' office. So there's going to be a lot of communication, over-communication, but there's going to be a lot of inaccurate messaging going out that you've seen so far, and all we can do is keep hitting home the facts and the proper messaging to the public, and also to anyone else that needs to be informed.
Yeah, and it's comforting or good to know that most of it we've been already doing. So which I think we all understand it's a major shift, but it's not something that's, like you said, something that we don't already been doing. So one of the things we can also do, maybe we just should, Matt and Luke, make sure that when they do your community quarterly meetings that we maybe send this out, you know, via our newsletter,
right,
and just try to encourage people to come by Zoom if they can't come in person to know more about this act. I think that would be great. So if we can put that down to try to really
drive. Trying to use this.
Yeah.
There's more.
Yep.
Determined by.
All right. Any further questions regarding this? If not, then it kind of ends the new business and questions. So
sure.
Going into executive session.
I was going to say, sure. Motion to enter into executive session pursuant to 5 ILSC 120/2C1 to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the village, and the village board will adjourn after executive session and will not return to open session or take action.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
So we're going to go into executive session. The only people that I'd ask to stay is